spend the time is 2 minutes in the office o'clock versus early morning. Scoop, a very, very good morning to you, all the Eagle FM listeners. Wherever you're tuning in from, thank you so much for always choosing us and rather choosing us also. Thank you so much for that, and we really, really appreciate your support. So welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. This is the show where it is dedicated to you, to just providing you with the latest update on the economy, entrepreneurship, public policy, that what we give you all here. And I'm your host, Lois Ashimi, and I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30 a.m. Now, on that, please, before I get into the international segment, please do not forget to connect with us on our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia. On, you find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newswire page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not forget also to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is now Eagle FM Media Hub. And just for daily also update, and of course newspaper alerts. And do not forget to download our app, Eagle FM app, or it's available on your Google Play Store and of course your App Store, just to also make yourself sure that you stay informed everywhere you go. Yeah, now to move on internationally, is that the over the Chisamba solar plant is nearing completion, with 97% of the work finalized. Now, the $1,000 million project utilizes higher efficiency bifacial solar panels that capture sunlight from both sides, maximizing also energy output. Now, plant manager Chizrenda stated that over 1,200 jobs have been created since construction began in July 2024, and then once fully operational, the plant is experienced to generate approximately 202 gigawatt hour of electricity annually, now enough to power between 30,000 and 50,000 homes. Now, that was the plant manager said. This is now in the Zambia. Now we might take a listen to this particular update.
Only a few minor works remain at the 100 megawatt site, the project that stands out for its scale and purpose. Plant manager Chiza Nirenda says the plant is more than infrastructure. It's a step toward energy security and reliable power for Zambians.
Yeah, generating with solar power, it does not really necessarily mean that the hotter it is, the more you generate. Not necessarily. It actually uses light. So the light, as long as you're able to see visible light, it means the solar modules are able to generate. So this actually gives you extra addition in terms of energy use because of the bifaciality, meaning it's able to generate from the front as well as the back surface of the solar module. They're quite robust, so they give you yields of 5 to 10% extra compared to the ones which are called monofacial.
For the government, the plant answers the urgent needs to meet the rising demand and reduce dependence on hydropower.
Absolutely. The president has been very clear. And when we look at such a project, which is at 97% done, meaning 3% just housekeeping, a few things that must be done, fittings, then it is done. By May, we have been told it will start functioning, meaning it will be completely done and start functioning, integrated into the national grid. The substation, 132 kV substation, almost ready to start evacuating power.
Young engineers like Francis Selabwal Yaofia, the only female engineer on site, say the project is a rare chance to build skills and grow Zambia's renewable energy workforce.
It's something that I have never done before, and it's something which has opened up my mind to see a transformer from the inside, to see all these smaller transformers behind me, and just everything is quite a different experience.
In just 10 months, Zambia.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that more African countries, including Uganda, Nigeria, Algeria, and Zimbabwe, are seeking or solidifying their role within the BRICS, highlighting the continent's growing strategic importance to the bloc. Now, with South Africa, Egypt, and Ethiopia already full members, BRICS has a significant African presence, driving economic and political collaboration across the global south. We might take a listen.
Group of emerging economies known as BRIC began with Brazil, Russia, India, China in 2009. It was renamed as BRICS when South Africa joined a year later. At the 2023 Johannesburg Summit, new countries were invited into the fold, including two from Africa. The block of 11 countries currently makes up nearly half of the world's population and about 40% of the global economy. As Africa's first BRICS member, South Africa remains a pivotal player in shaping the bloc's Africa's agenda. Egypt officially joined in January 2024, bringing strategic access to the Suez Canal and reinforcing BRICS's presence in North Africa. Ethiopia, admitted at the same time, focuses on agriculture, energy, and industrial development through BRICS mechanism. At the Johannesburg summit, Iran, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Indonesia were also invited to join BRICS as full members. Indonesia initially offered partner status in October 2024, was upgraded to full membership in January 2025. The BRICS partner country status allows nations to participate in meetings without full voting rights. Uganda officially became a BRICS partner state in January 2025. Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation, formally accepted the invitation to join BRICS as a partner country in the same month. Algeria was invited as a partner in 2024, but has yet to confirm its status. Zimbabwe officially applied in March this year, emphasizing alignment with BRICS's principles of sovereign equality and economic cooperation. Other notable partner countries include Belarus, Bolivia, Thailand, Malaysia, Kazakhstan, Cuba, and Uzbekistan. Daniel Arapmoy, CGTN.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on again to the next item is that South Africa's export took a hit from shifting U.S. trade policies, but its critical minerals resources remain in high demand. Now, as world's top supplier of platinum group metals, the country holds a strategic advantage, especially with those minerals exempt from current tariffs.
Africa's position as a leading producer of platinum group metals could be a trump card when it sits around the trade negotiating table with the United States.
With the amount of recycled volumes of palladium that come into the market there, they actually could be almost self-sufficient in palladium. However, they do not have, there's no chance of them being self-sufficient in platinum regardless of how much investment goes in. So in terms of, does the U.S. have an alternative market and for platinum, the answer is a definite no.
PGM's critical components in vehicle production have been left off President Donald Trump's proposed tariff list, but cars haven't. And it could prove taxing on both industries if they come into effect.
The U.S. is a very big automotive sector. It's only second to China in terms of size. And so it's a big sector, and PGMs are a critical part of the catalytic converter exhaust management systems, which are there to clean the air. And so palladium and rhodium and obviously platinum are very important in those particular processes.
South African miner Sibanye-Stillwater, one of the world's largest producers of PGM metals, with operations also in the U.S., sees opportunity in the turmoil.
Having that footprint in the U.S. is for us strategically important because I think a lot of this is about securing supply for the U.S. in terms of critical metals, self-generated, self-mined, self-developed.
The possibility of internal combustion engines being on the road for longer is also promising. But the industry must shift gears with electric vehicles moving into the fast lane. PGMs like manganese, chrome, and vanadium, essential for advanced manufacturing, military equipment, and clean energy technologies, could steer the industry in a new direction.
We produce metals, and we sell them globally. So both to Europe, to China, to Japan, and to the US. But as a company, we are really focused around the future uses of PGMs as well. So actively looking at market developments. And that market development is really in the form of new energy and in hydrogen.
Platinum jewelry is also back in fashion with gold prices shooting through the roof, while the metal on its own still rates as a favorable investment.
We've seen platinum ETFs similar to gold. But I think this is where there's an opportunity to do a lot more work on the demand side to increase the opportunities for investment and demand in platinum.
For South Africa's platinum industry, it's now a question of survival as the sector eyes a third straight year of declines in production and prices. The world's biggest producer will, however, want to reposition itself, not just to look attractive to the U.S., but to also...
All right, the time is 13 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that Nigeria is under pressure to diversify its trade partners after the U.S. announced a potential 14% tariff on its exports. Now, manufacturers want the move could drive up production costs, affecting both businesses and customers. Now, economic experts are now urging the government to deepen partnerships with China and tap into the country's vast untapped mineral reserve to boost export resilience. We might take a listen.
Aliu exports vegetables from this market in Jos to neighboring countries like Niger and Chad. He says higher U.S. tariffs will squeeze profits.
When you're levied high, you must look for shock absorbers. Because you're also in business to make profit, you will look for a way to cover your production costs and logistics.
Nigeria exported more than $6 billion worth of goods to the U.S. last year, including oil and fertilizer. While oil was to be exempt from the new tariffs that have since been passed, economic analysts warn Nigeria isn't completely safe.
Oil dominates Nigeria's exports, but relying on it leaves the country vulnerable. Experts say diversification is critical.
Economists emphasize that Nigeria needs to act quickly to mitigate the risk from a global trade war.
Nigeria should take proactive steps to start looking at diversifying and looking at ways, you know, to further boost its foreign exchange through exploring other mineral resources that are available in exportable quantity here in Nigeria.
According to Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics, the country has over 40 untapped minerals. With China's technology and investments, these could become new export opportunities.
Nigeria can also tap from the expertise from the Chinese, you know, to help us explore the resources we have here so that it becomes exportable, you get, because Chinese people actually have more advanced technology, they have, you know, and we can actually take advantage of that to explore what we have here to export to other nations.
Nigeria is also deepening its cooperation with China in agriculture and security. In January, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi visited the country and pledged over $130 million in military support to Nigeria and other African countries, support that could help secure farms and mines and keep trade flowing.
All right, there you have it, listeners. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Deputy President, Paulo Mashatile, says the ongoing trade tensions might result in a rising cost of living due to the increased prices. Now, he says this will potentially worsen the sluggish economic growth. The Deputy President addressed the T20 Africa Higher Level Dialogue in Pretoria. Now, the two-day gathering brought together African policymakers, leader think tanks, academics, and international experts. Now, they also want to amplify African voices and contribute meaningful to the global agenda under the G20 presidency of South Africa.
Paul Mashatile says major mega trends such as geopolitical instability, climate change, trade wars, and financial crises are causing hardship and have the potential to threaten the collective future. He says the African continent needs to be united to deal with this phase.
Africa itself should unite, and this dialogue is going to emphasize that. We as South Africa leading the G20 this year must ensure that these issues are addressed. Because as I said earlier, that, you know, with these trade wars, it will definitely lead to rising prices, which will affect particularly poor people in this continent. So it's important that we do everything in our power to mitigate against these challenges. As you know, that the president has decided that he will appoint a team that will also go to the U.S. to engage with the new administration there.
The United States imposed sweeping tariffs on a number of countries, but that has since been paused for 90 days, except for China. President Cyril Ramaphosa has also had a telephonic call with the U.S. President Donald Trump, focusing on bilateral relations between the two nations.
It's a positive move, because remember, as South Africa, we've always been committed to resolving these challenges. So I would say that as really one of the efforts that our president is taking to ensure that we normalize these relations. We have already said in South Africa that we value our bilateral relations with the U.S. And we want to see that continue. We are the biggest trading partner with the U.S. in the continent. And therefore, we want to ensure that that continues.
Delegates at the T20 Africa high-level dialogue are focusing on the role that is played by the African policymakers and experts in ensuring that South Africa's G20 presidency benefits the continent.
This is the first meeting, big conference of the Think 20, and we decided that the first meeting needed to focus on Africa. At the end of the day, this is very much a South African and an African presidency. This is the second year that the African Union is a member of the G20, and it's so important to bring together other African think tanks from across the continent who are working on the diverse issues that the G20 is focusing on to come together to debate the issues, to identify pathways to achieving what African countries have identified as important.
I think in a changing international landscape, it's very important that South Africa is working with like-minded countries around contentious issues, shaping the G20's agenda. And of course, the fact that the AU has been admitted as a full member of the G20 provides a strategic opportunity for South Africa, not only at a government level, but also the other 13 engagement groups, including ourselves as think tanks and research organizations.
South Africa says it's committed to placing employment generation, advancing gender-responsive policies, and equitable access to opportunity at the...
All right. Now, to move on to the next item is that the blue economy has identified as catalyst for economic growth in the Eastern Cape as the province launched the G20 provincial roadshows. Now, the Minister of Small Businesses, Business Development, Stella Ndepeni, says the roadshows will encourage conversations around competitive localization and ways to bring in small and medium enterprises from the township and rural areas into the G20 conversation. Now, that South Africa is hosting the G20 summit under the theme Solidarity, Equality and Sustainability.
The G20 launch in the Eastern Cape is an excellent opportunity to develop the entrepreneurial prowess of the province. Ndabeni says the solution to the underdevelopment and the economic challenges of the province will come from the province itself. She has called on the entrepreneurs of this province to change the narrative and take advantage of the ocean's economy.
What we'll be doing is to visit two projects in terms of the port of PE and the port of Ngqura, where we are seeing the work that is being done by small businesses in the fishing industry and also those that are busy with the repairs of the automotive, including the ships that you see here. So this is the work that has been done by entrepreneurs that are supported by government and other private sector businesses. And of course, without that, we've got to make sure that incubators or small businesses are incubated when they're still at ideation phase. This is why we'll move from the port and we go straight to the University of Nelson Mandela in order to launch a program that we've facilitated with Nelson Mandela, a CIFERI, the Center for Entrepreneurship and Research, and also the entrepreneurs that have graduated there. All we are doing is to say, it doesn't matter if you're in the township, it doesn't matter if you're in the village, but you have a role to play in growing your own economy. And the best way to do that is to tap into the opportunities that are presented by the ocean's economy, which the province of Eastern Cape is great in. And of course, tourism, we know that Eastern Cape is a very beautiful province.
There was a strong focus on the need to leverage on the ocean's economy. Premier of the Eastern Cape, Oscar Mabuyane, highlighted that Gqeberha has significant potential for marine tourism, opening doors for small businesses. He says the province is progressing well with investment in marine tourism infrastructure and infrastructure development at nature reserves facilities that has a capital expenditure value of 28.8 million rand, while creating jobs for local people. Mabuyane is concerned, though, that some cooperatives were given fishing rights but were never given any support.
So it has been a futile exercise to give our people fishing rights, fishing permits, but don't give them boats. Yeah. So they are taking those fishing permits, sell them to the people who are well off with boats and all that. So we need a very integrated strategic approach, DTIC here, DFFE here, everybody under one roof, to say when we do this, we're able to support and give the necessary complementary support that is needed by our SMME. We want our people in townships, our rural areas. This, to us, can talk directly to the rural development strategy, because most of our municipalities are rural, that are along the coast.
Deputy Minister of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, Narayan Singh, has acknowledged these concerns and says a review is necessary.
For us, I think, and what I'm hearing is we need to do a review of those fishing cooperatives and their efficacy. Are they really benefiting from being a cooperative, or is it just a piece of paper that they've got? Fortunately, we in the department are engaging in a program, and Deputy Minister Benny Swartz is going to be in the Eastern Cape within 4 or 5 weeks, meeting all these cooperatives to find out exactly what their challenges are. And listening to the delegates here, it would be resources, having capital to buy fishing boats, and even gaining access into the markets, because it seems to be captured by some of the big people, and I don't think it was the intention of forming these cooperatives to allow that to continue. So I will go back with a message that we'll have to relook at the cooperatives, what they do, what they don't, and how they can be supported.
The first day of the launch concluded with the launch of the Nelson Mandela University Center for Entrepreneurship and Rapid Incubator, aimed at stimulating the establishment and growth of the youth startup companies and other compatible student businesses, as well as promoting student entrepreneurship.
All right, and the time is 25 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early mornings. Keep now moving on to Cameroon, is that the in Cameroon, a non-profit organization is rolling out a tech education for children aged 7 to 18, aiming to prepare them for a tech-driven future. Now, the program, which includes coding, robotics, and AI, has already reached over 28,000 children, with a strong emphasis on fostering creativity and innovation.
Onde, a real Kitio, prepares these children for a future that may demand familiarity with tech. In 2018, she founded the Learning and Support Center for Information Technologies, better known as KST, an organization keen on equipping children with tech skills. The young learners study educational programs that fuel their creativity and introducing them to innovation both in tech and science. Through KST, Ariel hopes that these young brains will develop into a generation of innovators and tech-savvy entrepreneurs.
On dit souvent que l'éducation c'est dès le bas âge.
We believe education should start early. When children are introduced to tech from a young age, they grow up comfortable with innovation and are not intimidated by new tools. They adapt faster than someone exposed to it only in adulthood.
The classes are offered in two different shifts, the morning one for kids aged 7 to 11 and the afternoon one for those between 11 to 13 years. The curriculum covers basic coding techniques, robotics, 3D design, artificial intelligence, and much more.
What I teach kids is creativity, how to express their imagination by creating comics and animated stories. From writing scripts to drawing characters and animating them, they learn how to bring their ideas to life, just like what they see on TV.
The young learners are also introduced to various web-based software to help them draw and create their illustrations. And the result? Some, like Marianne Kobisi, are now helping their parents in their tasks.
We discovered KC through our child's school and were impressed by its focus on tech education. Our daughter was already curious about computers, so we signed her up for the tech club. I'm not part of the ICT generation, but she's gained so many skills that she's the one who now helps me with computer tasks at home. She knows how to use Canva and other tools that are really valuable for a child her age.
I really love tech and I have fun too. I'm learning to use different software like Canva and Twitter.
KST has already trained more than 28,000 children, and more than half of whom are girls. Over 24 schools have already adopted the course and are now leading the way in nurturing a generation that embraces digital tools as an integral part of their education.
All right, there you have it. Just lastly on an international segment is that President William Ruto's recent state visit to China marked a significant milestone in the deepening bilateral ties between the two nations.
Ruto's state visit to China was marked by high-profile meetings and a symbolic tour of Fujian province. Chinese President Xi Jinping and President Ruto witnessed the signing of 20 cooperation documents in such areas as the Belt and Road Initiative, technology and economy and trade. During the visit, the two leaders agreed to elevate relations to a China-Kenya community with a shared future for the new era. They also agreed to jointly promote education, people-to-people and cultural exchanges, as well as news and media cooperation. President Xi Jinping called on the two sides to enhance regular policy communication and carry forward the friendship forged through generations. The Chinese ambassador to Kenya this morning briefed journalists in Nairobi, emphasizing strengthened bilateral ties.
The two sides firmly oppose new hegemonic tools such as unlawful unilateral sanctions, decoupling, tariff barriers, and technology blockade, and a call for reform of the international financial system, improvement of the development financing for developing countries, and promotion of trade and investment.
All right, there you have it. We can go into a very short commercial break, and then once we return, we can take you through the economic news within the country.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Imane Kakarunga, the Africans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a
day. Alright, welcome back. The time is 32 minutes in the of 6 o'clock and this is early morning scoop. And thank you for joining us. And if you just really just tune in right now, thank you so much and a very, very good morning to you. Now, to move on, rather to start off economically, locally, is that want to start with one of the lead stories from today's newspaper. Please not forget to rather ask and subscribe to the newspaper, rather to our channel so that we can at least just be getting the newspaper every day's release. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So, or rather send through your details to 081-241-44. That's a number you can send through your details that includes your name, your email, and then you can able to send through, to get the newspaper every day it's released. And just to start off is that the Rondo government garage has completed up to 80% of vehicles repairs in-house over the past 10 months. The garage spent over 1.2 million Namibian dollars on spare parts. Now, senior artisan foreman Samuel Gebhardt revealed this on Monday, saying this shift has reduced the garage's reliance on internal on external service providers. Now, most of the parts we buy are for Toyota, Nissan vehicles. That's what he said, noting that essential items like brakes, pipettes, and tires are purchased twice a year. Now, Gebhardt remarks follow a recent directive from Minister of Works and Transport, Veiko Nekundi, who ordered all government garages to submit lists of redundant vehicles within 2 weeks. Now, the moves aim to clear outdated vehicles from garages within 3 months. Now, to comply, the Rundu garage submitted a list of 21 redundant vehicles on 10 April. Now, most of them were written off due to accidents and have been moved to a designated auction yard. Now, Gebhardt explained that demanded vehicles go through a strict inspection process, and inspections are thoroughly documented and, of course, reviewed by senior officials before and final decision is made. That's what he said. And vehicles deemed beyond repair are isolated and, of course, sold and auctioned to recover some value. Now, in 2023, the government raised over 105 million Namibian dollars from auctioning of unused vehicles, even as calls grow to lift the ban on new vehicles purchases for public offices. Now, regional governors and chairpersons of regional councils in the same year urged the government to add the memorandum that has restricted vehicles procurement for offices, ministries, and agencies. Now, the 5-year moratorium was imposed in 2020 by President Hage Geingob as part of the measures, and it bears the purchase of new vehicles for ministries and the other public officials. However, restrictions began as early as 2015 when then Finance Minister Kalesh Radwain ordered a halt to vehicles purchases. Now, despite the freeze, the government spent 55 million Namibian dollars on vehicles in 2022, and for the 2022 to 2025 financial year, the planned expenditure has surged to 210 million Namibian dollars, making a 282% or rather more than 100% increase. Now, Gebhardt explained concern about the lack of new vehicles purchases, and the fleet is urging maintenance costs are high, and the number of unusable vehicles is also shrinking. Now, that's what Gebhardt said. Now, he also said it's important to balance the disposal of old vehicles within investment in new ones, and it's also vital to dispose of all the vehicles, but also those must also be strategic investment in new ones, especially in regions like Kavango, where shortages are acute. Now, despite the challenges, the GEP has said the current fleet still serves ministries adequately, but he warned the auctioning of 20 to 30 vehicles could result in only 2 or 3 replacements. Now, there is an expectation that all vehicles will be replaced, but in reality, ministries are still waiting and trusting leadership to deliver. That's what he said. Now, the time is 37 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and we are, this is Early Morning Scoop, a show that is dedicated to you, just to give you the economic, the policy maker, the policy update, and of course, trade and entrepreneurship update in that regard. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Namibia Business Summit for 2025 was launched on Monday at the city of Windhoek, which is expected to bring about external business persons such as Connie Ferguson from SA, and of course my colleague David Chombe got into the conversation with Martin Nankela, the founder of Namibia Business Summit. We might take a listen to their conversation.
Yes, Eagle FM listeners, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at business development and we are looking at investment. I got into the conversation with the founder of Namibia Business Summit, Mr. Martin Nankela. And it is indicated that Namibia Business Summit is expected to take place on the 5th of July. But to get more on this, we got in the conversation with the founder. Just to unpack, Mr. Nankela, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, maybe just to give us a brief overview, what is the background of Namibia Business Summit and what do we expect from this year?
Yeah, so the whole idea behind the summit is really to empower people to go into entrepreneurship. We feel that entrepreneurship can be a good catalyst that people, that we can use to, you know, solve for unemployment. So the thing is always that, you know, everybody wants a job, but I think some of us need to start creating these jobs. So that's really what it's all about. We want to create the jobs. We want to help the government. We want to help the private sector, to inspire young people to go into SME and to really, you know, do something about the businesses in Namibia and to make sure that we can be able to deliver value.
Yes, maybe if you can go back and look at how you started, what is the tracking back the success of Namibia Business Summit? What have you learned and what are you going to do different this year?
Yeah, so definitely, there's definitely been appetite for the platform. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that started with us, that was part of the platform, that scaled their businesses. We have people that came to this platform without wanting to do business, and then they learned the insights on starting a business, and many of them have started their businesses. So because of this, we've seen that, you know, we need to keep doing what we're doing, and because of that, we're continuing with the summit. This year, though, we are bringing an exciting speaker, Connie Ferguson, that will be headlining, and then we'll be hoping that her story can really inspire people to go into business, and especially in the creative industry. Yeah.
Yes, looking at some of the Namibia business summits or business event, we have seen that it's only most of the corporates or those who are wealthy, yeah, who attend those events. However, the question is, what about, you know, informal business operators? How inclusive is the business or Namibia business summit, and how do you plan to accommodate those who are not able maybe to make end mean or sustainable profit within the small business that they are operating?
So number one is we give away 10% of our tickets to SMEs that are really trying, that are really doing their best to come into business. Yeah. So 10% of our tickets and our entrances are giveaway tickets that we really want to inspire SMEs and entrepreneurs to come through. We also avail of a platform where SMEs and small informal sector players can come in and exhibit their products, and we guarantee 100% increase in their sales and visibility. So there's a lot doing for the informal sector and also for the SME space with this platform.
Mm-hmm. Yes, apart from Namibia bigger corporations, what do we expect?
Apart from Namibia bigger corporations.
Yeah, in terms of attendance.
Oh, in terms of attendance, we're having the industry players. We also have SMEs, people that have started their businesses from the ground up and that have learned to grow them, to share their stories on how they did it and share some tips on how we as other entrepreneurs can leverage and learn off from them as well.
Yes, you'll find our ways to those business people or those SME operators who are contemplating on coming to an event and they don't really, they're not really sure on whether to come or not to come. Just maybe words of motivation to them regarding the upcoming business summit and what they can gain from it.
Yeah, this event will be mouth-watering. It will be exceptional. We guarantee value definitely from this event. We guarantee insights, information, networking opportunities. So it will be, you will be doing an injustice to yourself if you do not attend this event. The event is really for everybody to just come together, network, and then together we can build the Namibian business ecosystem through this platform.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Nakela.
Thank you so much.
All right, there you had it. The time is 42 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that Namibia is at higher risk of facing cyber attacks in 2025. Now, according to the latest financial stability report, the report released by financial sector regulators warned that cyber threats remain serious and are likely to occur within the year. Namibia has been targeted by cyber attacks since last year. Several companies and government ministries have fallen victim. Now, the report identifies cyber threats and global financial stability as the two main risks to the country's financial system this year. Now, both risks were rated with the highest probability of happening. Now, the report says cyber threats might come in the form of phishing, spoofing, and over-reliance on third-party service providers. Now, to respond to the cyber Security Council recommended more awareness campaigns to fight phishing and called for stronger firewall standards. Now, it also advised institutions to implement manufacturer authentication to counter poofing and, of course, to improve procurement policies and due diligence when working with third-party service providers. Now, Bank has been told to keep improving their cyber risk management practices, and the report defines financial system stability as the ability to observe internal and external shocks, whether economic, or political, or otherwise. It also describes it as the absence of serious disruptions in financial transactions and between households, businesses and financial institutions. Now, beyond cyber threats, payment card fraud has been rising, and most of those cases are a card not present fraud, and where transactions on e-commerce platforms are done without a one-time password, that is OTP, and this happens when a customer uses a card at an unsecured and does not also need to confirm the transaction within an OTP. Now, in response, the central bank and other oversight bodies have taken steps to deal with the issue, and those include closer monitoring of fraudulent and transactions and broking certain comments sites. Now, they have also worked on protecting financial data and enforcing standards such as the payment card industry data security standards. And this set of security guidelines ensure that all stakeholders handling card information follow strict protocols to protect card holders' data, helping to prevent data breaches and frauds and the theft of sensitive payment information. That was the report stated. Now, the report also shows a notable increase in electronic funds transfer flood during 2024. Phishing attacks are the main causes, and the central bank has been in talk with industry players to strengthen how client data is handled. Now, cybersecurity platforms have also been mobilized to raise awareness about payment fraud and promote better security practice. Now, that's what we are getting. Now, to the next item, my colleague Azafia Basun interviewed Petrina Shitalangao, the Public Relations Officer of the Ondango Town Council, regarding the complementary training program for 40 local entrepreneurs. We might take a listen to this specific discussion.
Good morning, Ms. Petrina. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Good morning to you, to Zafia, and all the Eagle FM listeners.
The Ondangwa Town Council provided free training for about 40 entrepreneurs today. How impactful is this initiative for the local entrepreneurs?
The training is really impactful to this local entrepreneurs, in a sense that that it will be able to help them overcome the challenges they are facing, especially in their day to day operations. So it will capacitate them, for example, in terms of financial management, how to deal with competitions, how they can invest in their business to grow, and how to deal with some of the issues, especially because not all of them are registered. Most of them are from the informal trading area. So how they should now be able to, how can they register their business and networking and change of mindset. So hopefully today's training will impact them in a way that even if you're not registered, then you know what is in it if you have your business registered.
Okay. We would like to hear about the challenges they are facing and how they hope these issues will be addressed.
Most of the challenges faced by this entrepreneurs, in most cases, it's lack of business growth. For instance, you have someone who has been in the open market for a very long time, and this, you have been just selling the same product for over the years, so there is no creativity or there is no innovation. So the lack of innovation thereof, the lack of knowledge on which door to knock, no innovation, no motivation were some of this, the challenges that these entrepreneurs were facing. And we hoped, or we are hoping that this training will overcome all this.
After this training, will these entrepreneurs be supported in terms of gaining capital to further run their businesses?
Hopefully, not to say they'll gain capital or funding from, to say the town council, because this is a day training. So it was our hope to say when these people are capacitated or with knowledge on how to grow their business, when they are well informed, when they are inspired to try something new, when they can innovate different things, and then when they have the ability to network, then hopefully this will be able to have them have paperwork, and then from there they will be able to manage their funds well and able to obtain capitals on their own from various banking institutions or financial institutions, because council is not really, it's not within our mandate to provide funds per se or capitals for this business to start. However, we can provide platforms such as now today's training platform that we have provided for them, because it's free of charge from their end. So council has catered for everything.
Okay, the 40 entrepreneurs, which businesses do they operate, and how will this training give their business a niche?
This like I said before, it's micro. Small and medium enterprises. These mostly are the vendors from the open market and other youth entrepreneurs from within the town. Printing shops, the ones selling, they're running small tech shops, running little tailoring businesses, running hair salons, and others that sells other goods, food products from the open market and all that. So it's mostly from the informal trading sector.
Okay. And finally, who is providing this training, and what motivated the town council to provide this training now?
This training was provided for by, just one moment. This training was provided for by Team Training Management Services. It's a company that is based in Ongwediva. Mm-hmm. So, and to say why we have chose to strain this sector. It's because part of our strategic plan, MSMES, it's a strategic focus area in our 5-year strategic plan. So that is that's why we are training these people. So it's just the support services that we offer as a council to our SME sector, just to enable them to meet their financial obligation, because some of them, especially those operating from the open market, you realize that they are struggling even to just pay that little fee that the council put on, that they pay to council every month for having their stalls in the open market. So we hoped that those it's capacitating them, so that and it's also filling that gap, that that skill that is lacking in them, so that they can overcome the difficult issues and difficult situation where they might find themselves. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Petrina, and have a good day further.
Same to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, the time is 53 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We heard it from the spokesperson of Ondangwa Town Council, Petrina Shitalangao. Petrina just emphasized that this initiative or that initiative is designed to provide informal traders with vital skills, including financial management, innovation, and business registration. Now, she also noted that many entrepreneurs struggle with a lack of creativity and business acumen. And the training conducted by Team Training Management Services aligns with the Council strategy plan to enhance the SME sector through capacity building efforts. Now, to move on to the next item is that Namibia has, or rather we can just move on to this particular next item.
Yeah, on our next item, Namibia has initiated the development of a banana trial aimed at bringing the country closer to the agriculture self-sufficiency and, of course, innovation. Now, this project is known as the Banana Project, and of this project began last year, the 2024. And on this, we are joined by the project manager, that is Helson Kambungu, just to unpack this for us and, of course, updating us with regards to this particular project. Very good morning to you, Mr. Kambungu, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and good morning.
Thank you so much. We are doing great. Yeah, Mr. Kambungu, speak to us about this. I mean, the trials began last year, right? So far, how has the crop been adapting to the weather conditions?
Okay, yes. Yes, the project started last year.
Mm-hmm.
We planted around the 7th of February.
Mm-hmm.
That's now in the Zambezi production zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ngalamwe, the Kongola site.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the crop has been doing great.
Okay.
I won't really bring up a lot of, like, maybe specific challenges that would be a threat up to now.
Mm-hmm.
Though, of course, at the start, we had experienced frost and heat stress. The crop experienced that.
Okay.
That was just basically because of the planting period.
Okay.
The time we planted, it was quite, because it was small. We planted in Feb.
Mm-hmm.
So that time we didn't receive enough rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crop experienced heat stress.
Okay.
And since it was the first time for us to plant at such a scale,
mm-hmm.
so we're not really much of aware as what to do,
mm-hmm.
but we only discovered like what we should really do to assist the crops
mm-hmm.
after or maybe during the heat stress.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there again during winter,
mm-hmm.
also attacked by frost.
Okay.
But then after that we managed to protect the plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so far the plants are doing quite well.
Now, in that regard, Mr. Kambungu, can now maybe farmer now start maybe venturing into the banana cultivation, or what do you think for the farmer that are also listening right now to radio?
Okay, that's but the thing is that at this stage, won't really say much as to what they should do, maybe to encourage farmers to come on board already, because this is a trial.
Okay.
So now this trial is what will inform us as to how should we encourage our farmers, as well as to share with them with experience, to give them the complete detail by the end of the trials.
Mm.
But then at this point, we just said that it's, the starting point is one to understand the soil type, as well as the water availability. Then, we see like, whether the area is prone to heat stress or frost stress. Those are the things just to look out for. Then from there now, one just also have to look at the type of fertilizers that may be needed at the planting stage, as well as the application thereof. Yeah, but what we'll just say is that this is a trial.
Yeah.
It will give us now more informed decision, or for us now to give our farmers an accurate advice based on this trial.
What is the estimated time frame before harvesting this banana crop, and where do you plan to supply this produce? I understand it's trial, but of course trial can get to a point where the results are really just the best.
Good. Yeah, on average, bananas takes 18 months.
Okay.
To harvest that now from planting all the way up to the first harvest.
Okay.
For this particular one, because of the heat stress and frost stress that was experienced, then it's basically taking more than 18 months.
Okay.
So given that the harvest is expected to be anytime from August, September then.
Okay.
Yeah, like for this particular one, we are expecting the first harvest to be around that time. And the idea is, depending on how the yield is, of course, our target is to sell it to the local markets.
Okay.
And also the idea is, before we harvest, we want to call farmers like in the surrounded area to observe, also to see how the fruit is looking, and also how harvesting is done. But of course, the idea is to sell it to the local market. That is a big opportunity in fruits production here in Namibia, because we import roughly 94 to 96% of the fruits that we consume in Namibia, and banana is the second most imported fruit. That's now after apple. So what I would say is that the opportunity is there. We encourage our farmers to start in a small scale, then also to reach out to the office where they'll need an direct advice on maybe which specific fruits and how to plant them, how to take care of them. Like now at NAB, we have our fruits marketing officer who is well equipped to that kind of information, kind of all the kind of assistance that they may need. So, but the opportunity is there. So I want to encourage them to take that niche market.
I mean, we want to ask on the why only Zambezi? You guys may be planning also to do some trial this side, because of course there are also farmers here. And seeing not so far ago, or within just last week, I spoke to a farmer, a banana grower. So why is only the Zambezi side? Are you guys coming this side, or how is the planning also? Yeah.
Thank you very much for that question. Actually, I've met that question several times. Currently, we have not only Zambezi, actually. Zambezi is just our first trial site, which was planted last year, as I indicated earlier in Feb. But this year we also planted in Etunda green scheme. That's one of our trial sites there in the north. That's now catering for the north central production zone.
Okay.
So that one was planted in January.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, but it was this year.
Okay.
Then we also planted two trial sites, one in near Rundu, then another one in Divundu. So the idea is for us to keep expanding the trial sites to cover the whole country. But of course, bearing in mind the areas that are free from frost, because otherwise bananas doesn't like frost. So that's the idea. So the idea is for us to have, even in the cash production zone also, we are looking at, I forgot. We also have in cash production zone near Osvelo, we also have a trial site there.
Okay.
Which was also planted this year. So basically we are looking at at 5 trial sites. Of course, we have this one in Zambezi, Sungalama.
Okay.
Then this one near Oshivelo, Etunda Green Scheme, one in Rundu, then another one in Rundu. So currently we have 5.
Meaning also the other trial, they're also doing perfectly? Or
yeah, they're also doing very well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're also doing very well. To this point, we've been ahead of any maybe pest and disease outbreak or shortage of water.
Mm.
It's only some, yeah, just at the beginning, the one at the Tunda Green Scheme, at some point, I think there were people in the surrounding community that wanted to steal some seedlings from the field. But yeah, that was it.
All right.
On other, all other trial sites, everything's doing fine.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kampungu, for having you.
All right. You're welcome.
All right.
Okay. Have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Right, the time is set. 3 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scripts. There you heard it from the project manager, Helson Kampungu, just on the how the banana trials are progressing so far. And of course, he said that they all are doing great. And for all those 5 trials that are, that were made or that are planted, in several regions, in the country, they are all both doing all great. Now, to move on to the next item, is that letters from the various schools in Rundu gathered yesterday for a mass protest demanding justice and a stronger protection for children. Now the group marched to the Kavango East Government Governor's Office where they handed over a petition calling for urgent action in response to the recent deaths of the children in the in Kavango. We might take a listen to this update.
Today, I stand before you with a heavy heart, but a hopeful spirit. We are gathered here to address a crisis that should never exist. The killing of our school children. No child should ever leave home from school and not return. No parent should ever have to bury their child because of senseless violence. Crime prevention begins with all of us. It's about more than security cameras and locked doors. It's about creating communities where our children feel safe, valued and protected. We must invest in mental health support, conflict resolution, programs and mentorship opportunities that give our youth hope and direction. We also need to work closely with schools, law enforcement, parents and communities, leaders to identify risk early and act before tragedy strikes. Let us teach our children not only academics but compassion, respect, and resilience. Together, let's stand up, speak out, and take action, because our children deserve to live, learn, and grow without fear. Their lives matter, and their safety must be our highest priority. So we ask for justice. Thank you.
Today we are gathered here with shattered hearts and anger in our bones, with love in our voices, for 2 innocent girls that were brutally murdered. We stand here together, not just to mourn, but to rise as one. It's time to say enough. Ingrid and Beyonce were just 2 innocent girls. They were not statistics, not headlines, but kids with dreams, hopes, futures. But that was brutally taken away from them, far too soon. It's time to say enough is enough. To those in power, your voices shall no longer be in silence. To those murdering our kids, it's enough. Time is up. It's time for a change. I thank you all for your presence. Today shows me how much a community can do together. And I stand here not just to remember them goodbye, but to remember them in change, because we need change.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I standing before you, I go by the name Zara Martha. I acknowledge the presence of the governor
The teachers and the all learners are here. I greet you all good afternoon. We are all gathered here not to celebrate, which is not a happy occasion, but it's a sad occasion. I stand here that I heard that two learners in Okahanja were murdered. And this is not just a piece of cake that we can all take in our hearts. I stand here with you with a heavy heart that we need to get justice for school learners. I thank you.
All right, there you heard it. The time is 7 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, another item. My colleague in the Kavango East region, Anakleta Haikara, engaged with one of the student leader regarding the free education at the tertiary level. We might take a listen to this update.
Do you welcome the Thai decisions for free education at a public university come 2026?
Thank you for the question. And it's a straightforward response is yes. Mm-hmm. And this is a long overdue decision. And for us who were privileged to listen to the SWAPO Manifesto 1989, that was before Namibia got her independence. Mm-hmm. There was a commitment of making education free from primary to tertiary education. And we have seen that there has been an overload, a delay in terms of introducing free education from primary. Thanks God, at first the ministry or the government have decided to grant free universal access to education. That was primary, then it was expanded to secondary, and we were hoping that one day it will happen. And it's so moving to see that the current president, within her first 34 days in the office, has made a bold decision. I would like to underline that a bold decision to make an announcement that by 2026 academic year, tertiary education will be free. And this is a news that no one can be able to doubt or resist. We must just hope for seeing it being implemented.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the quality of education this will have for population in Kavango region?
Look, the Ministry of Education or the mission for the Namibian education is to provide equitable access to quality education. Now, I would like to underline the introduction of free education, most of all, free tertiary education, most of all, it will give access, equitable access to all the Namibian students that will be qualified to enter universities, to enter vocational training, to enter colleges that belongs to the government. So it will reduce or it will eliminate possible discrimination. In her state of the nation address, she emphasized that she is worried about the gap between the have and the have-nots. The have are those that have resources. And obviously, with the cost attached to tertiary education before 2026, children from the well-to-do family enjoy that access, because once they qualify to the university, parents are able to pay for them to attend universities or colleges or vocational training. Whereas those from disadvantaged families, they struggle. So we still have grade 12 graduates, advanced subsidiary or grade 11 graduates who are seated at home because of the means to enter a tertiary education. And the Kavango East and West statistic is very clear as being among the poorest regions in Africa, in Namibia. So as a result, we assume that due to the poverty level in the two regions, this decision will drastically grant an opportunity to these graduates from secondary school to enter universities or vocational training centers or colleges of their choice.
Can Namibia afford to have free education at university level?
Yes and no. In the first place, why I have said yes is the fact that so far, the most of the university students are receiving grants through NSFAF. And this is government's money. And free education simply implies that these students, NSFAF will no more fund them, but this money will be channeled to go to these colleges or vocational training centers and universities. And by admission of Her Excellency the President, she said that the implementation of free education, we must underline the fact that the government will pay for tuition fees and registration fees. We are still waiting for further disclosure in forms of directives as what are the terms of reference for students to benefit. I know of some countries that have introduced free education, but there are conditions such as, will the students be allowed to repeat several years and the government still pay? Or will they say that for the repeating modules, you must pay yourself? That we have to wait because the president has announced, now the ministry will send circulars and directives to outline as what are the implementation, what are the conditions attached to it. But what was obvious yesterday in her speech is that accommodation and other costs will be borne by parents, meaning that the government will provide to tertiary institutions tuition fees and the money that these institutions always collect through registration fees. But unfortunately, parents, guardians, and sponsors will still take the responsibility of other hidden costs of education. If you are talking of hidden costs, particularly the higher education, it will be the living expenses, that is accommodation, the utility, the food, transport. In this world of technology, students need technological equipment, such as laptops. They will still need to procure it themselves through their private fundings. So then the aspect of quality education, whether it will be compromised or enhanced by the introduction of free education, we remain to see. That if you look at the primary and secondary education as a case study, the complaint from the secondary schools and primary schools has been that the delay in disbursement of funds to schools, that the government takes long before they release this money to go to schools. So we hope that this is not going to happen with the university because it is going to compromise quality. That the programs of the university start as early as immediately after festive season when institutions of higher education opens. If there will be a delay of 2 months, 3 months before this funds is released, then it might compromise the execution of their programs because you can't run university or college or vocational training programs without funds. So the procuring of equipment. So vocational training centers need equipment. If it will be delay in, we remain positive. We hope that there are mechanisms in place. We believe that the government have taken experience from primary, free primary education, secondary education, where there has been complaint of that school's account remained dry for an extended time and funds are only released late. Maybe through this experience, it is not going to happen at the tertiary education level.
On this greed and over product of education, people given there is already many youth on the street who are unemployed?
Not necessarily the case, because, look, the students that are enrolled so far at a tertiary level, it's not necessarily that it's funding issues only as the determining factors. There are issues of entry requirements. What we will foresee is that there will be a competition to enter universities. There might be students who will not have an opportunity because the universities might be full. So unlike now that there will be those that are staying home and the entry requirements will be relaxed to allow the spaces to be filled because of cost of running the programs. But we will foresee that institutions will be full, which is a good thing. So graduates are already on streets. So the impact of free tertiary education have got minimal contribution towards filling up streets with graduates because we have already have graduates that are unemployed. So we will not entirely blame it on the introduction of free education that many graduates will be in streets unemployed. Because so far, we have those that have graduated or are graduating this year. We will have those that will be graduating next year. These are not product of free tertiary education. But do we have job for them? Not necessarily. So the issue of unemployment is a debate on its own that needs to be addressed independently without attaching it to the introduction of free tertiary education.
So to make this work, what do you think is the best approach to be taken?
The best approach is to learn from own experience. Own experience is to realistically analyze what has been the issue with primary and secondary education when it was introduced to be free of charge. What has been the administrative hiccups that have delayed the full implementation of universal secondary and primary education. Those gray areas need to be addressed. So institutions must know how much is the government going to contribute per student enrolled at a particular institution. Because if you listen to schools so far, there has been claim that apparently schools enroll first before they will know how much each learner is receiving per year, and there has been claim that these funds reduce every year. Mm. That, for example, maybe the government was paying 180 per learner. I'm just citing an example. 180 per learner in 2023, 150 per learner in 2024, and 130 per learner in 2025. So, I believe that experience will help to know how to make it work without compromising the implementation of quality education. The aspect of inflation. So the prices of commodity have increased. So institution faces a challenge to buy necessary equipment that are needed to implement quality education. And we are talking of in the situation where students are paying themselves. And we believe that with the government taking charge, and if they release these funds in good time, then universities will be able to equip itself to provide quality education to its graduates.
Right, the time is 21 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is early morning. So we can go into a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we can give you one last update of the day.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo Chikao shafaa sana nana alongeshefa ya ishiwike moshiwana Iye moya o, ota ingongo tisamweni Anageshefaa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma iyoe Yongeshefaa yoe okupikiramo Eagle FM Media House Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu Moambo, lengera selma, konara heka tuimu Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oambiaj Eagle FM, the eye
All right, welcome back. It's 23 minutes in the of 7 o'clock and we have about 7 minutes just to hand over to Tate Mike Oshoveri to take you through the unpacking of the day. Now, to move on here, and lastly, is that the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Natural Resources has found no illegal activities in the Uis area located in the Dores constituency of the Erongo region. Now, the findings were filed in a recent report approved and released by the parliament. Now the committee is investigated the issue after concerns were raised by former Rentless People's Movement parliamentarian Henny Saibab on 5 April 2023. Now in May 2023, the lawmakers met with all affected stakeholders. Now, according to the report, the committee first engaged the Dores Constituency Council, three traditional authorities, and private representatives from the joint ventures between the Shifeng Investment and Long Fire Investment. Now, Limited. Now, based on the committee's finding and the review of the supporting documents from the stakeholders and the two involved ministries, no illegal mining activities were identified in the operations of the joint ventures. That's what the report states. Now, this was judged at the time of the consultations. However, there are other significant concerns related to the mining activities that were taken note of that what also the committee ended. Now, during the consultations, a community group expressed anger at the traditional authorities for how they handled information about the joint ventures operations. Now, on that, the concerns were raised by a community group regarding the traditional authorities' handling of the administrative producers related to the operations of Shifeng, and allegations of corruption were made against the traditional authorities as the communities and conservations expressed frustrations at being excluded from the consultations. That's what the committee noted. Now, small-scale miners in the area also raised concerns, and they said their livelihoods were being affected by restrictions linked to the joint ventures operations. Now, furthermore, small-scale miners voiced their grievance about being denied access to their heritage rights and being labeled in the process as being illegal miners. That's what also the report outlined. Now, the committee visited sites where community members had stopped mining activities. They found only trenches, which locals said they had ceased working on because of missing or weather unsatisfactory documentations. Now, the delegation visited a site of trenches that was stopped by the community due to the lack of legal documentations, and according to them, that what also the report noted. Now, on that, the Ministry of Environment, Forest and Tourism was engaged to explain issues arising from the site visit. Now, Environmental Commissioner Timoteus Mufeti told the committee that the Environmental Management Act of 2007 was being amended to address problems like unclear procedures that cause misunderstandings between the stakeholders. Mofeti indicated that the public consultation were very limited and the law stipulated that the advice of objections should be placed in newspapers. However, he acknowledged that not all the communities have access to newspapers on time. That's what the report says. Now, the committee has learned the Ministry of Environment has only 7 officials to handle 150 environmental impact assessment applications each month. Now, Mofeti said this workload create a backlog, causing delays in reviewing environmental clearance certificates and limited inspections and emergency responses under the compliance frameworks. Now, the committee recommended several changes to prevent future confusion and conflict among communities, private companies, and traditional authorities. Now, the committee also met with Mines Deputy Executive Director Rastus Shivolo and Mining Commissioner Maggie Shino to discuss the issue of small-scale miners being labeled illegal. Now, on that, the deputy executive director explained that small-scale miners were categorized as being illegal as they do not apply for mining licenses. Now, a collaboration platform between the Mines Ministry and the United Nations Development Program, UNDP, had engaged with several communities on how to assist small-scale miners in applying for mining licenses and advised them to consider conducting environmental impact assessment on a larger area that can cover all the small-scale mining activities. That was also their report indicated. Now, the ministry said funding was made available to support those collaborations, but small-scale miners did not make use of that opportunity. And that marks our last update of the day. And the time is 29 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock. Thank you so much for tuning in on this edition of the Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And this is a show that gives you the update on the economic, on the entrepreneurship, policy update, the trade, and that's what we give you all here. Thank you so much. And I wish you luck ahead. And please not forget to tune into all the program just for the good, insightful update that we are giving you here in the Eagle FM radio. Now, also, do not forget to follow us on social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And do not forget to download our app, Eagle FM app. You'll find that on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store. And you can able to download and be able to rather also listen to the past shows, the past family shows that you also miss out. You can able to tune in through the podcast. We are all lined up just for you to go listen out there. Thank you so much. And wherever you go or wherever you are, you can able to listen through that app, that is Eagle FM app. Thank you so much. And from me, Loisa Shimi, enjoy the rest of your day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna e Matina Omjo. Chikao Shafatana Nana Longishifa, ya isuike moshiwana. Iye moyawo. Ota ingongoti samweni. Anageshefa ya Namibia. Ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nilanditomwa yue. Yongeshefa yue kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina.
kara omukwashilipaleki gwimwepo yomoe programa detu moambo dhengela Selma konola hetatu yimwe ndatu ndatu heyali hamano ntano oombiyali Eagle FM the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onsea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.